How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Masks, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Our number again, remember, all calls are kept strictly confidential. Again, 718-758-0400. Just a reminder, anyone that wants to have a free naloxone kit, another form of Narcan for opioid overdose prevention, inhaler, it's good to have one in every shul, in every playground, in every home, in every area, school. It's good to have one. We never know when somebody may overdose on opioids. You can save a life. Call for a free kit to be mailed to your home and a training by Zoom. Please give us a call. If you save one life, it's like saving a world. 718-758-0400. I'm really happy to have on with us tonight a colleague, somebody that I always spend time at the Nefesh conference with, and that is Brochi Moskowitz, a psychotherapist, a child life specialist. She works globally with couples and families and children and groups in helping her clients heal through their trauma and create the life they want. I'd like to welcome you on tonight. How are you, Brochi?
Hi. It is so great to be on here. It's a real honor to connect with you in this format. And yeah, it's lovely to be on here.
So I mentioned Nefesh, and just for everyone to know, Nefesh is Nefesh International Organization, which is an organization of over 1,000 from Jewish therapists around the world. And we have a conference once a year, and all during the year, there are trainings and neighborhood conferences, smaller conferences. But usually I get to see Brochi and your dog. I saw Brochi the last time.
Yes.
That big dog.
Yes.
Huge dog.
Yes.
But very playful dog.
Yes.
At the Nefesh conference. So Brochi, let's get right to it. You are a psychotherapist and you are a child life specialist. Can you explain what that is to my listeners, please?
Yes. So I'll start with a child life specialist first, because I think that is the one that less people know about. And psychotherapist, I'll add that, you know, towards the end. But as a child life specialist, I started my training working with children and families in hospitals, going through various stages of illness, acute illness, long-term illness, terminal illness, anything related to children and death and dying, really, was the original training. And that is what child life specialists do in the service world at large, is mostly working with children and families who are going through medical crises and anything related to bereavement and grief. So I did a couple of years of those of that training while I was also training to become a social worker, a therapist, a clinician, because I always knew that I would be doing work in this field. And then as the years went on, I combined those two programs to create, you know, more of who I saw myself as a clinician, working still with children and families through the grief process related to medical stuff, but then also combining it with everything else that I was learning about children and families at large and broadening the definition of grief to only something that happens in the physical realm, but also the other kinds of grief that happens in families all the time. You know, the grief of realizing that children are behaving differently than we thought, and the grief of motherhood, the grief of fatherhood. So at this point, I would say in my practice, I do both. I do the physical grief work and things related to physical illness and wellness, but also a lot of work with children and families and couples and groups about the other kinds of grief and the other kinds of living that they want to create. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yes, thank you. So before we speak about therapy and trauma, I just, you know, we're in the summer, just began, and kids are away, but there are many families that are still home, local. It's a lot of time. Kids get home from camp. It's a whole long evening, Sunday, weekends. Why don't you share what you offer ideas to families about activities that they can do to promote healthy relationships with themselves and others, please?
Yes, I love that question. And it's so time appropriate, like you said. I even want to add that in my practice, the summertime is really a much more relaxed time, because I do recommend a lot of the families in my practice take some time off from therapy during the summer and put to practice the skills that we talk about throughout the year, or in their last few months of therapy, because it's a time where the pressure is less, the outside pressure, the school pressure. People are sometimes in different communities and they're a little bit more open to movement and play. And that's what I'm going to say as the first and most important thing for parents to do with their children during this time is just play. Just play. We sometimes think, the parents I work with often think, you know, I have to plan something. If their child is a teenager, I want them to plan something. We need to plan something. And there is a place for planning and, you know, having a plan to go somewhere on a trip once a week or a mini trip or something like that is definitely a good idea. But most important, remember the power of play. Remember the power of play. Playing board games. If your child likes video games, put on a headset and have them teach you how to play. Playing outside, playing with chalk on the street, playing ball. Playing is magic. And that is the first thing that I would recommend in terms of activities. Other more concrete activities that could be fun to play, that also just help promote connection, would be one game that I like to offer to parents is called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. So the parent and child will face each other and they'll take turns making a face or doing a mime, like a mini action, and the other person has to copy it completely as best as they can. So it could be anything from a little smirk to a big action, but for the other person to mirror it. So again, this is play. And neurologically, what that does is it helps foster connection between the two people playing, because their neurons in their brain are actively mirroring in a game-like format. So that's something that I would recommend. I always recommend things related to art. So having a space in your home or outside where you can just spread a canvas and have fun, paint, canvases or pen and paper, even just to color. It doesn't have to be a big project, but getting art out with your child can be an incredible way to connect. And then another thing that I would recommend is creative problem solving. So one of the things that brings a lot of triggers and fears to parents during time off is there's going to be so much going on and I have to do so much. Remember, your children, even though their brains are less developed because they're little, they also have a lot of almost otherworldly creativity and ideas if we let them come to it. So allow yourself during this time, even if you're not actively playing, let's say your kids are playing and you're cooking dinner or you're just doing some work on your computer on the side. If there's a problem that's not an emergency, wait a moment and let your child figure it out. Or if your child is doing something that you would naturally jump in and stop them, wait a minute. Ask them instead, hey, sweetie, what's your plan with that thing that you're doing? They may answer you something that actually makes sense, right? So that also provides, it's not an activity per se, but it's a frame of mind that allows parents to relax a little bit. Your children are good problem solvers. Let them.
So what I hear is not only to play, but I'm hearing that it's important to be playful as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
While playing, you're more free. The kids are more free. Their schedules are different. Mm-hmm. So we need to train ourselves to be more playful playing.
And even more playful while being, right? If you're cooking dinner and you can sing a little song about chopping the onions and you can sing a song of thank you to the piece of meat that you're putting in the pot, that's already an energy of play and it lightens the entire space in the home, which allows children's minds to play. And when children's minds are playing, they're not bothering you. So everyone wins.
Right. And the mirror, mirror on the wall is a great idea also because you're training your kids to read other people's facial expressions and you're helping them with the language of emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that would be if we gave the activity to help, you know, have them guess what emotion, you know, let's say the mother makes a certain emotion with her face and the child has to copy it and guess what the emotion is. Also, we can, you know, that's also part of, you know, we can add that as part of the game. And also that's something that I would recommend to couples, even though it sounds so basic, and couples often need help reading each other's faces and doing this as a couple, doing this as a family, really fosters that ability and connection.
Right. Now, there are people that say young children shouldn't go to therapy. The parents go. What is your feeling of that?
Yeah, I agree with those some people. I mean, depending on how young the child is, you know, I'm not going to sweep it with that wide of a brush. But of course, there is space for a child to learn skills in therapy, to be able to have a safe space to express what they need to express. Absolutely. But in my practice, the people who work with me know that I welcome a child in a family model into my practice. So when someone reaches out to me for therapy for their child, one of my first questions will always be, are you, the parent of the child, ready to embark on your family therapy journey? If their answer is no, I will warmly and with a smile refer them to someone else. But if the answer is yes, then we have a parent team that I can work with, because time and time again, I see in my practice and in conversation with my colleagues that when parents realize their power in helping their child develop, even through the hardest times, that becomes an almost indestructible family. So sometimes in the course of therapy with a child, that is my role with the parents, to help them remember their tremendous power, their abilities to heal their child, their abilities to guide their child, their abilities to witness their child. And that can do more long-term for a child and a family than any therapy or therapist ever can. So while there is great strength in doing the therapy work with a child and helping them learn about emotions and helping them learn about coping skills and helping them learn how to tolerate their feelings, absolutely, there's time and space for that. But most importantly, we want to get the family to adopt a new way of living. The family to understand this is how we do emotions. This is how we identify feelings. This is how we tolerate reality. This is how we change reality. This is how we love each other. This is how we respect each other. And that is best fueled by the head or the heads of the family. So I highly recommend a family model of therapy that includes the parents rather than only a child going to therapy.
Right. And of course, there are times that children must be in therapy, whether they were molested, they lost a parent. I mean, there are reasons that children must be in therapy. But young children, we always need the parents to buy in.
And I want to add to that, even those children whom we all understand need to be in therapy, like the examples you mentioned or anything else a person can come up with. Understanding that the child themselves needs to be in therapy, even then, to have a supportive parent in the therapy process with them, that creates a container for which the therapy work can continue to live outside of the therapy space.
Right.
Right. So even a child who went through trauma and they themselves need to be in trauma-focused therapy themselves, when we have a parent on board or their parents on board to help them, the effectiveness of the therapy skyrockets and actually lasts.
Well, that's why when parents call our helpline for young children, we always recommend that the parents start first in therapy.
Yeah.
What do you usually say to your clients about the balance between too permissive parenting and the harsh parenting that many of us in the previous generation were raised with, possibly?
So what I'll usually do when that big of a question comes up, when that theme comes up, is remind parents of their three roles, their three jobs as a parent. And just a side note, this would come after exploring with those parents a little bit more about their history, how they were raised, what they liked about how they were raised, what they didn't like when they were little, what they swore they would do, what they swore they wouldn't do, because that gives us a lot of context and a lot of information about what we're dealing with today, right? So that's kind of a little bit of the background. But when it comes to tachlis, when it comes to, okay, now, you know, now I understand, I have an understanding of the past and I want to apply it to today. This is the three jobs that I remind parents of. The first one, your job is to help keep your child alive and safe as best as possible, right? So teaching your children about safety, teaching them the basics of this is what Earth is like, right? This is how we keep ourselves safe. The second job is to help your child develop, right? A child goes through all these developmental stages in life, and then part of that is loving your child. Love is a massive ingredient to development. And the third one, which is the one that's going to answer this question that you asked, is witnessing. The third job of a parent is to witness their child having a journey of life. To witness their child having a journey of life. So how do we do that balance, right? Of too permissive parenting. Oh, I just let them do anything. Versus very strong authoritarian parenting, is I draw parents' attention to this third job of theirs, their job to witness their children. And I tell parents this, start with witnessing, right? In the first glance, if your child is safe, good, you can keep witnessing. If your child is not safe, pause witnessing and make sure your child is safe. But if your child is safe, continue witnessing. And then as you witness, before you act, think about your second job as a parent, which is to help your child develop. So if there's something you can do in that moment that's going to truly, genuinely help your child develop, help them solve a problem, it's going to help them deal better with emotions, it's going to help them be better at relating to other people, then act. But remember, you're acting as a parent. You're not acting as someone who's on another team. You're not against them. You are their parent. You are their biggest teacher. So witness, if they are not safe, jump in and help them. If they are safe, but you're still annoyed and, you know, instinctively you may want to do either the too permissive parenting or too authoritarian parenting, pause, keep witnessing, and then go to your third job as a parent. Let me help them develop. Because typically when you go into that mode of I'm here to help my child develop, you're going to notice that automatically you're in that balanced state. You're not just saying, oh, whatever, too permissive, because then you're not helping your child develop. But you're also not going to go super authoritarian, because then you're simply sending your child's nervous system out the door, right? Because they're not able to listen to you then. And then you're not helping them develop either. So if you become truly committed to those three jobs of parenthood, you can trust that your body is going to find its balance of knowing what it's like to be on that beautiful middle ground of not too permissive and not too authoritarian, because you're committed to helping your child truly develop.
Brookney, we're speaking about parents, and it could be one parent that has one parenting style and another parent with another parenting style. And a child may be acting up, having a hard time self-regulating. What do you say to those parents about being on the same page, that importance of reacting on the same page?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And that comes up very, very often. When parents like that who are on different parenting pages sit in my office, some of the background work that I'll do with them is hear a little bit more about difference in their coupleship in general, right? I want to know, is this the only area in which they are different? Are there other areas, the other areas of difference? How do they deal with it? How was difference dealt with in their families of origin, right? So this is going to be some of the background info that is very relevant. The more information I get about a set of parents about this, it helps fill the canvas behind them. I can learn more about their story. But then again, when we bring it tachlis, when we bring it practical, there is going to be work done to help parents get to the same page of parenting, meaning having the same goals, understanding really, truly, deeply, what is my role as a parent? Why am I here? What can I do for my child that no other person in the world can do? What was I chosen to do for my child that no other person in the world was chosen to do, right? I am their mother, I am their father. So the work will be a little bit more back end first, right? To really get parents on the same page about what is our goal and role as parents. Then there are going to be certain things that the parents are going to agree on that are non-negotiables. Whether we both agree or whether I agree and you disagree in terms of style, let's say a parent might say a non-negotiable is that we never yell at our children. And this doesn't mean it's never, ever, ever going to happen. We are human, you know, and we will make mistakes, but we will repair. But meaning it's not an acceptable thing that is just a style difference. Right? So both parents will be able to share their non-negotiables, and then to see whether I was raised this way or not, is this a non-negotiable that I can agree to? Once the non-negotiables are agreed to, then I work with a couple to make room for both people to really be allowed to have their experience of parenting. Meaning both parents will not always deal with conflict in the exact same way, but if it doesn't infringe upon any of their non-negotiables, then parents will allow each other once in a while for this person to take the lead, once in a while for that person to take the lead. And if it doesn't, again, if it doesn't infringe on the non-negotiables, support your partner, because you know, because of the back-end work that you've done, and you can see, because they're not infringing on the non-negotiables, that they really are committed to the same goals and roles of parenting than you, but they might be doing it a little bit differently. Does that make sense?
And that they are on the same page about how they're
the
bringing
goals
up
and the
their
roles.
Show. Right.
Yes. The goals
you talk
and the roles.
About, you talk about repair. What do you suggest to parents at that point that may need to repair a rupture between a child and a parent?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that you bring this up, because it's one of the most crucial skills for parents to know, both amongst each other in the coupleship and as a family value. that we repair what is broken in relationships. One of the ways to build a healthier society at large is when we do this work in our homes, that we repair what is broken. So there are very concrete guidelines for how to do that. Why? Because many of us did not get it growing up. And those of us who did know to cherish it, right? And we can do it, you know, with our kids. So some of the practical ways to repair, I'll give one technique. I use psychodrama in my work a lot. And there's a psychodrama technique that I really love called the do-over. So if something happens between a couple or between a parent and child that went differently than ideally you would do, right? Your most favorite version of yourself wouldn't act that way. But in that moment, your frequency dropped. You acted in a way that was completely out of line. We want to normalize for family members to be able to tell each other, the person who offended, so to speak, or even the person who was hurt, to say, oh, that hurt me, or oops, I know I hurt you with what I just did. Can we do a do-over? And what's a do-over is you almost rewind, you know, the old-fashioned, or even now on new-fashioned screens, you could rewind and go back to the start of a scene. Let's rewind and let's start the scene again, and let's redo it in a way that I'm actually going to be proud of. Let's do a do-over. And if I leave you with only one repair technique, this is the one that I want to share today, because it is so powerful to have that code word, let's do a do-over. It allows both the quote-unquote offender and the person who was hurt to recalibrate, breathe, and decide consciously how they want to redo that moment. And from that redoing, you then check in with your child, you then check in with your partner. I feel better about it this time around. What about you? How did it land on you? And they will usually say, yes, that does feel better. And then you can say, I'm sorry for losing it that first round, but I'm glad that we got to do it better now.
Brookie, great ideas. We could talk so much about this topic. One last question. We're running out of time. Staying together for the kids, is that a valid argument against divorce?
Great question, and one that comes up very often. And here's the answer in short. Because like you said, running out of time, but I'll give it to you in very short. If you're arguing, I need to stay together with my partner for the kids, then stand by what you say and be together with your partner. If you're together with your partner in a home, but you're at war in your hearts or and in your voice and in your communicating and in your being with each other, then don't call it staying together, because you're not together. You're staying at war in your home for your kids. But if you're saying, I want to stay together for my children, and you can truly commit with your partner, and you're both able to do the work to be together, together in your hearts, together in your speaking, together in your respect towards each other, then you have a pathway to a healthier family over time. But watch your words, because if you're saying, I'm staying together, make sure that together would be proud of being used in that scenario.
Thank you, Brookie. So much good information. And yes, we recommend that parents start in therapy first for themselves in order to be together for the kids. Thank you, Brookie, for coming on.
Of course, it's an honor to be here anytime. And thank you. Thank you for what you do to give back to our community, such beautiful communities with so much beauty in so many ways. And when we can boost, you know, the homes, couples, children, and families together, we really, really come together to create a better society. So thank you for what you do. And I'm honored to be a part of it in any way that I can.
Amen. Thank you. And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, and now still virtually, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Ita Bas Chanoch Aharon. Please consider to go online to Mask parents.org and make a donation so we could continue with all the mask programs. Thank you and have a good night.